Welcome to the Spiritual Shit Podcast with your host, Alia Lovely. This is a place where we discuss the spiritual, the mystical, and the magical of the human experience. I will give you personal insights on this podcast and interviews and card readings to help you think about the critical questions we are facing in these complicated times and to shed light on the concerns of the collective. Here, I will take what was woo-woo to the mainstream, so no topic is ever off limits, to have authentic and thought-provoking conversations to help you think about spirituality and how it affects our humanity in a variety of ways. We will laugh, we will cry, and most importantly, we will think about our inherent resilience, transformation, perseverance, and highlight the limitless possibilities that exist within each of us. I want to inspire you to push beyond your own limits of comfort and strive for an open mind, no matter the odds. I hope to encourage you to embrace your potential and pursue your dreams with an element of fun, spirituality, and humanity. Remember to like and subscribe to never miss an episode and review and share so others can be inspired as well. To connect with me personally, go to thelovelyalia.com or join my Patreon at patreon.com/thelovelyalia for behind the scenes extra content for the show and our monthly forum to find like-minded souls to discuss your own spiritual journey. Follow me at Instagram at thelovelyalia as well as YouTube for video podcasts. And thank you so much for joining me on this journey. So let's get into today's episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of Spiritual Shit. I'm your host, Alia Lovely. And today we have Matt Kahn, who I'm so excited to talk to. He's a spiritual teacher, an empathic healer, a speaker, a phenomenal author, and has his latest book out, All for Love, The Transformative Power of Holding Space. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. You online have such a loving presence. And even as you pop on the call, I'm just like, oh, I feel so chill and zen by your frequency. I just want my audience to know a little bit more about you as a person and your journey towards becoming this awareness around empathicness and how we're able to heal the world with our love.
It's been a very interesting journey. It's funny where I think back in my life, it feels like such a blur. But mm-hmm. In the beginning of life, I remember a reoccurring experience where I didn't realize I was feeling other people's emotions or could feel other people's emotions. And so I would confuse the feedback of other people's feelings as their opinion of me. Mm-hmm. And so I would sense someone's discord with their family. I would sense their issues with a parent or with the world, and I would think that they had an issue with me. And so I spent most of my life cheering people up and under the impression that only when they felt happy around me were they happy with me. Developed this really deep level of emotional, or what I call vibrational codependence, where I was a people pleaser, I was a shapeshifter, I was a performer. And I was just trying to make sure everyone stayed happy, because I thought as long as they were happy, I was approved of by them. And as I went through my life, had many deep spiritual experiences, beginning when I was 8, had a very big out-of-body experience. And then it really ramped up in my late 20s. I started to realize that I am psychically tuning into people's energy fields through the emotional body, and that I'm an empathic healer. And so it helped me to really kind of make sense with the fact that what I'm feeling around other people is not necessarily about me. It's just my awareness of their experience. And so it helped to resolve a lifelong misunderstanding. And as I say this, I'm sure there's many listeners that hear this and go, I think that's me.
Yeah.
Because in truth, we're all empaths. It's just that we're all at varying degrees of awareness, refinement, and sometimes varying degrees of denial about it. But really, we're all empaths, just learning how to understand our abilities and how to use it for the benefit of our healing and for the healing of others.
Mm. I know a lot of people listening are going to say, that's me. And maybe 4 years ago, it was really rampant where everybody was like, I think I'm an empath. That word came out. In fact, my first episode is, you might be an empath if... And it has 80,000 something like downloads or whatever. People were like, that's me. And I got a lot of reactions from people being like, I understand that experience as well. But the thing that you said, the vibrational codependency, that is something that I have struggled with for a very long time. No longer, but I'm a recovering vibrational codependent person. But
it was definitely something where I didn't understand the difference between someone else's emotions and mine. And then real codependency stepping in, because it was like, unless they're happy, I can't even feel good. And, you know, then it became this like manipulation, almost an unconscious one, of where I was trying to take care of everyone and be the puppet master. So that way, at least energetically speaking, I could feel clear. I could feel good. So what are some of the first ways that you started to recognize that that was kind of a part of your pattern? I think a lot of us sometimes are, we're just tired, but because we've done this all the time, this is just how it's been. I'm always the sister that makes sure everybody else is okay. I'm always taking care of my mom and so on. And I have, I'm always attracting narcissists around me. Why is that? How did you come to that awareness?
These are great questions. You know, I think in the beginning, my awareness was just these spontaneous moments of clarity where I realized that I was managing people and confusing that with relating to people. I realized I was performing most of my life early on versus relating to people in my life. And so I would, there'd be moments in my earlier years where I'd be aware of things, but I wouldn't have the maturity to understand what I was being shown. And I would watch myself, and it very much was a pattern my mom had. My mom would perform for people she was in front of. And my mom would actually, God bless her soul, would change details and facts based on the reaction she was getting from people. Mm-hmm. And so my mom would reinvent history and go into this very performative form of relating. And my mom and my dad, you know, I said, again, God bless them, had this pattern where their way of demonstrating their intelligence was pointing out the inadequacies and imbalances of other people. So I remember, like, when I was a kid, my parents would be in the living room performing for their friends and reenacting things with their bosses. And I was so codependent that them making fun of other people felt my body like they were making fun of me. And I just felt so deeply for other people that I, it's funny, I look back on this, I processed this a couple of years ago, that I was actually more hurt by how, what my parents said about other people than I was about things that actually happened to me, which is interesting. Yeah. So codependent that you carry more traumas for how someone talked to, about someone else.
Yeah.
That, you, but I feel everyone's experience in my body. So, but to answer your question, I became aware of the fact that I'm managing people. I'm trying to make sure everyone is okay. I'm trying to make sure everyone's needs are being met. And I did this for so long that it became very comfortable, because when you do it, when you play a pattern out for so long, it becomes instinctive, and then your ego turns it into a value.
Right.
Right. That's the greatest way to sell yourself on a pattern, is to make it a value. So I confused nurturing with caretaking, and I confused managing with relating. And I remember just intuitively thinking back to my life, there was these moments in my late 20s where I started talking to my guides and I started developing my ability to channel, although I didn't know that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in these conversations with my guides, and they would just give me little exercises. And one of the exercises they gave me one day is they said, what if you assume that everyone in your life is actually fine and without a single need unless they voice that need to you? And it really kind of took me back, and I thought, and I instantly had a realization. I went, oh, so instead of me using language to constantly see and monitor where people are at, are you okay? Are you level? Do you need anything? Instead, it was, what if I just took life at face value?
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, everyone is actually okay. And if they're not okay, and if they are consenting to needing my support or help, they're going to ask me. Because what would happen was, I would feel people's emotions. I would feel people not okay. I would then ask them how I could help them, but they were not in the awareness of the help they needed. So even if I offered help, they couldn't really receive it.
Right.
So there was this realization of, I have to allow people to be in their experience so they can know what they need. And then if they consent and decide that I'm someone that can help them, they can ask me a question. And of course, if someone's standing in the corner facing away from everyone, I go, hey, what's going on? Are you okay? Hey, are you okay? But by and large, most of my life was spent with checking in with people, monitoring them, and most importantly, making sure they were okay with me.
Mm-hmm.
It kept me from really getting to know my experience. And the deeper question I was asked by the universe is, what is the nature of your experience when you are not spending time making sure people are okay with you?
Mm-hmm.
And it just opened up this tremendous space, this really incredible space. And I began to have the freedom and awareness to explore my experience and to allow people the space to have their experience. And to learn how to trust that their experience only had to do with me when they suggested it did, which didn't mean it did, but only when they brought it up to me did that mean, okay, then we go into that kind of nurturing kind of language. So I really learned to give people space. And in a family where I didn't have any personal space for my family, that if my family wanted to talk to me and interrogate you, you were talking to them. And if you mm-hmm. said, I'm not in the mood for this, well, that doesn't really matter. So
no boundaries.
I didn't grow up with any boundaries whatsoever. So I didn't understand what it meant to respect the boundaries other people didn't have either. I didn't have boundaries with myself. So these are all things I had to kind of learn spontaneously. And just as another aspect, just to answer the question in a different way, what shifted me out of this constant politicking of checking in, are you okay with me? Do you like me? Do you super like me? Right? Making sure that everyone, 100% approval rating of Matt Kahn. and then the next moment comes, is it still that way? So I lived like that for many years. And I remember I would have these experiences like in middle school spontaneously. And again, it takes you so many years to process this.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in middle school, I had this moment where I was being very kind to someone that wasn't being very kind.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember spontaneously feeling in my body and having an awareness of, by being kind and polite to someone, I feel in my body what I'm waiting to feel in my body once they approve of me. And mm-hmm. I started to realize that my conduct towards them was actually a more immediate way to feel safe, full, and sovereign in my body. And of course, these words wouldn't come for many years.
Yeah.
That being kind would bring me the feeling in my body that I thought only came alive when other people approved of me.
Mm-hmm.
So then I had this realization of, I don't have to work hard making sure people like me, because the way I want to feel occurs by how I treat them. And then I started to see, and how they treat me is actually reflective of how they feel in themselves.
Right.
I started really slowly to piece this together and go, oh, I'm internalizing other people's experiences as a way of buffering the fact that I don't feel like I can connect with them as heart to heart as I want to. But if I treat them kindly, I'm experiencing a heart-to-heart connection, even if they're not meeting me there.
Right.
And it became very freeing, but that was like the arc of my journey.
Wow.
Yeah.
The thing that comes up for me is when we talk about empathicness.
Yeah.
And in my own journey, like when I finally discovered I was an empath, more than that, like psychic channeler, medium, kind of whatever, when all that stuff started to happen, I started to think about why. Like, why would I be someone who's an empath? Why would I be super sensitive to people's feelings? And my own conclusion after many years, like you said, I didn't have this verbiage when I was six, but the inconsistency in my household with people's moods and just trying to predict how that little shift of energy was going to affect me. Ultimately, mm-hmm. there being some kind of coping mechanism there where if I was able to predict the shift in someone's mood, I could, you know, acquiesce to their request. I could show up in the way that they would need. So that way they wouldn't be upset with me, but they also wouldn't be upset. And that, I think, positioned me very well. And a lot of people, a lot of my clients, we talk to about this a lot, to be very codependent. And it got me in a very narcissistic marriage where it was just like, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? And it was the what can I do party for 5 years, just trying to make this person happy. And when it clicked, where I was like, I've been kind, I've been nice, I've done this, I've done that, and you're still not happy with me, there's nothing that I can do.
Right.
I have to be happy with what I am or who I am as a person and be okay with your discomfort of your own experience, that like, I have nothing to do with that. And that's when I ended that marriage. But it was this process of having to detangle, like, that feeling of like, okay, I'm responsible for someone else's feelings. And also that need to want to predict the shift in environment to protect myself, self-preservation. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because if we talk about the reason why narcissists and empaths seem to partner up so often, it's because a narcissist is one who is solely run by a pattern of control. And someone who is run by a pattern of control is going to be the perfect mirror to help someone who is on the journey of healing control to wake up from it. And so ultimately, empathy is how heart-centered people deal with patterns of control, whereas in the aftermath of an uncontrollable, volatile emotional environment, in the aftermath of having some sort of loss, neglect, or abuse that couldn't be controlled, we ask ourselves, what can I do to be more in control, as if more control means more safety, which is the ultimate setup.
Right.
In a narcissistic mind, you know, and a narcissist is one who in the future, most likely in future lifetimes, will be an empath. But a narcissist is one who plays the role of helping to free empaths of their attachments to control, because it's the mutual attachment to control that attracts it. But a narcissist is one who says, dominates or not to be dominated.
Say that
so
again?
So there's not even dominates or not to be dominated.
Got it.
Control so not to be controlled. So there's not even an awareness of pain. There's not even awareness of trauma. It's, I'm too much in control and I'm in a constant place of seeking control to even be aware of there being anything there. So that ultimate control pattern in a narcissist is the ideal environment for an empath to wake up from and to learn how to say more control doesn't mean more safety. That actually safety comes from learning to, you know, meet my own needs, manage my own expectations. Most importantly for empaths, it's about learning how to relate to people where they are right now versus the potential we can see in them. Because oftentimes when we're connecting as empaths heart to heart, we're aware of the light of our consciousness. And we're seeing that same consciousness in another person.
Yeah.
And they may be there 5 years from now, five lifetimes from now, but we're tuning into where they're headed, not where they are. So we have a very big delusion as empaths of, I perceive people as who they're becoming, not who they are right now. And if I make decisions based on who they are, I'm afraid I'm judging people. So a lot of empaths, right?
Woo! Okay. Not, like, everybody's going, whoa.
Right there. Whoa! Right? Like, imagine you go on a first date and you show up at the first date and the person there is holding an axe that's dripping with blood. And you go, let's not judge them. Give them a chance. This might be a Halloween costume, even though it's November. And it's our intuition, but we're afraid to be discerning because we think it's judgmental, because we want to give other people the chances we don't think we have, or that other people didn't give us. So then there's that thing that lets us or helps us be the perfect accomplice to every narcissist, because narcissists are not very good at what they do. They need us to pull off the crime.
Yeah. Oh my God. So, okay. I know this to be true. This is amazing. Yeah. But the way that you've said it, I think is just going to open so many eyes when they hear that, because the idea that we're afraid to be discerning, that right there, just rung in my ears. I didn't hear anything else. Like just that part. Just the idea of being fearful of being discerning because of that fear of like, okay, right. I don't want to judge someone. I don't want to like cut them off beforehand. And like, I'm a Cancer. Like, we just so open heart and everybody, I'm the mama, come on in, you know? And I was constantly in my 20s, just seeing everyone for their potential. And at some point I was like, I turned into the other side of the Cancer where I was like, fuck all, like nobody, I don't want to talk to anybody, walls up, I won't hear you. Yeah. So it became this thing where you said something really important. We're very intuitive, but yes. When we are afraid to discern,
yeah,
it really robs us of our intuition, what our intuition is really saying. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, well, okay. So the other part of the bombshell is, okay, so we're afraid to be discerning because we confuse intuition with judgment. And mm-hmm. It's because we live as rescuers. Empaths are rescuers. So when we see someone that we should maybe have some distance from, or this is not quite the one, we go, no. I'm going to see potential, because subconsciously we say, no, they need me. And yep. More and deep. If we want to get more insidious, we need them. Mm. Empaths, we need to rescue people. So we see them for their potential, not for who they are. We act like space from them is a form of rejection. And then we try to micromanage them and help them become that potential so we can have this kind of fantasy of a connection with them. But if we are able to say the universe creates people in the exact version for what you are strengthening in yourself. If you're learning strength and discernment, God's going to dress up as all these interesting characters just for you to say, no, thank you. And as empaths, if we remember that the divine can take our no, right? The divine's not a narcissist.
Yeah.
So say no to the divine dressed up as a ridiculous character. The divine can take it, even if they can't handle it. Mm-hmm. But we're learning to get comfortable with no, just as we're learning to be less anxious with our yes. Mm. So we're grounded empaths. Yes is not anxious. No is not avoidant or fear-based. And it's simply a matter of yes or no based on what resonates with us. And when it's a no, that character is moved into an environment that is more supportive for their evolution, just as you as an empath are moved into an environment with less distractions. So the truth is what always puts everyone in the ideal environment. As empaths wake up out of being rescuers, out of saying, I'm going to give someone a chance, which really subconsciously means I need people to manage. I need people to be inconsistent with me so that I stay in this critical thinking identity of ego that keeps me scanning my environment and wondering where I stand with people. So when you wake up out of the empathic ego, you are no longer lost in a dream of constantly wondering where you stand with people, because you yourself and the people you surround yourself speak words, and your words are verified by action. If the words you speak or anyone speaks are not verified by action, it's time to make some changes in their lives. And once you have words and actions verified internally and externally, right, your life is incredibly easy. You have so much less to process about yourself. And then the spiritual journey can be less about fixing yourself and more about getting to know all the gifts that the spirit within you came to bring to the world.
Booyah. Mic drop. Okay. Like, we could end the interview here. We're not going to, but there's so much there. So how do we get narcissism? Like, how does that come into our not for an empath, but like now that everybody's kind of like hip to what narcissist is, we have loads of people diagnosing people with narcissism all over the internet. Like, your boyfriend's a narcissist. He did this and this. So what situations are kind of like, what's your idea from a spiritual perspective of why that happens? Why do we have people here so blissfully unaware of the actions that they're taking that are harming and hurting other people in the name of self-preservation?
I'll give you a couple of answers. First thing I'll say, another bombshell, is there's not as many narcissists in the world as people say there are.
Yes, I agree.
So like, you know, like the difference between a self-centered, egocentric pattern structure and a narcissist is very specific. Mm-hmm. Like a narcissist is defined by someone who is incapable of empathy. Not someone who doesn't want to be empathetic or compassionate, but someone who's incapable. Oh, the thing doesn't.
Yeah.
Someone that's incapable of empathy and compassion. Someone who's incapable of seeing outside of their point of view. Someone who always has to be on the attack and needs to push people down to lift themselves up. So we see people that have qualities of this, but not an incapability. And what I would say is whether you're, so, okay, let's say we have narcissist. And then after that, we have self-centeredness. And then we have cracks in the openings to consciousness. The reason we have narcissistic patterning is because it represents souls that are coming to the planet who are in their earlier stages of incarnation. So what I would say is the people that are the most unaware of other people's feelings, the people that haven't learned to care about other people's feelings, the people that are incapable of emoting or, you know, having any kind of empathy, are just kind of in the earlier stages of their incarnation process. To be an empath means you've been here hundreds, if not thousands of times. You've been through this process so many times that you have developed an awareness, like if you go to Disneyland 1,000 times, begin to see things that is different than someone who's going to Disneyland for the very first time.
Yeah.
And we understand through the hero's journey that a narcissist is like even if you say like a villain, like in storyline purposes, a villain inevitably becomes the hero. A hero is a reformed villain. And it's kind of this interesting cycle and storytelling. In the same way, a narcissist is an empath in their earliest stages of development and in the greatest level of denial, because mechanism, all of that defense is actually to keep them from feeling, and everything has to be a self-referencing attack on others to keep themselves from being aware of anything else other than their defenses, which they perceive as reality. So yeah. It's the telltale sign of a very early soul. Now, not all early souls are narcissists. It's just if you're a soul that's going to wind up being incredibly empathic, your soul's journey might start with some time spent in narcissism. Because, I mean, I remember past lives, but I mean, How could I be so intuitively aware? How could I be so in tune with people's feelings? How could I be able to tune into the healing that any person needs, no matter their behavior or their actions? Mm-hmm. How could I have compassion for someone who's done something appalling?
Mm-hmm.
On some level, I myself hadn't gone through that. Now, I don't remember going through that. I don't remember doing that in this lifetime. But to assume that a narcissist is just this other group of people, like it's Star Wars, like the resistance. Versus the Death Star. The Death Star, right? And like, nope, I've been in the light the whole time. But really, if we all think of it, the darkness is not about like doing evil. I mean, evil things do happen, but darkness is about an incredulous lack of awareness.
Hmm.
I'm not saying that, you know, evil doesn't go through a reforming process. It absolutely does. You know, and then that brings up conversations like, you know, is incarceration about punishment versus redemption and things like that.
Right.
Because really, when we look at it, all dark actions come from a space of desperation and survival, struggle, and a lack of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
There are just some people that will, under pressure, crack open. And there are some people that will dominate, so not to be dominated. But ultimately, all those journeys converge, and we're all in paths, we're all avatars, we're all masters. But in order to be a master, and in order to be like a master guide or an archangel who is the guardian angel for some being who has to do dark things before they finally surrender to the light, imagine what that angel's journey had to have been for that training. And so I just, the subject matter requires some awareness, not that we keep ourselves as victims to these types of characters, but at least just to understand that part of what keeps us attached to narcissistic characters or self-centered characters is I think that we as empaths are trying to process that we ourselves have played similar roles before. And I think that's what gets us very hypnotized.
You know, when you talk about that, I think about the state of the world.
Yeah.
And I think about what I call the bad actors that show up, and it's like, why is it that they're always in the spotlight? Why is it that they're in the highest parts of government? Why is it that they're the ones who are making the most money? There's just a frustrating aspect when we look at those who are supposed to be leading, guiding our country, be in exactly what you said, this self-preservation mode, where it's like me at all costs, my belief at all costs, like anything that I can do to dominate women or people of color or whatever, like this is what we do. And this is just acceptable. It's justified. And to live in a world like this, as soft-hearted as I am, it's so hard. It's so hard. And you know it is. So what kind of advice do you have for people who are watching what's happening beyond? How do we have empathy and compassion for our systems that are failing us and people who are supposed to be leading, who are trying to like lead us down a hole?
Yeah, legitimately trying to lead us into a place of demise.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's something that I will share. And that is, and we have empathy for what the people in the highest levels of secrecy or darkness, however you want to phrase it, can we have empathy for what they don't know? Mm. Right? These are people that think that because they think they're a part of some elite class, that they have been exposed to aspects of ancient mystical wisdom. And a lot of these people are trying to use a lot of things to hack the universe and get their way. And mm-hmm. so there's this weird subculture of people that think they're the elite chosen one that run the planet, that want to run into the ground and all these kind of things. And we feel it, we see it, like it's obvious to see it. And at the same time, where you look at celebrity and you think of the things celebrities might have to do in order to be in that place of recognition. Here's something I want to say that's kind of intuitively. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's something that gets talked about a lot. Here's something a lot of people don't know, and this is what empaths don't know, and this is what people in those high elite places don't know. And if they heard me say it, they'd laugh at me. So I'll set up that the highest truth is laughable to those people, which is part of the irony of this.
Mm-hmm.
The laughability is that people always call this world a dream. And of course, that doesn't mean that we don't have empathy for the value of every life. For me, every life matters. Every life, doesn't matter who it was, life matters. And every life plays a role in the awakening of consciousness. But this planet, by and large, is the experience of life. It's a world in which we came to wake up in as a training program. So if you think of this planet like you're going to Disneyland, let's say Disneyland is reality. But this world is the parking lot of Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people that confuse what happens in the parking lot of Disneyland, tailgate parties, whatever, as actually Disneyland. Because if you're in the parking lot, you look around and you can see the rides. You go, no, this is Disneyland. There's just a lot of cars here for some reason. Otherwise, you're in the tailgate party, the parking lot of Disneyland, and you haven't even gone through the gate. Mm-hmm. So the people who run this world, who think they run this world, are ruling the community of a Disneyland parking lot. This is a training program. This is a dream. And when you cross over and leave this planet, you actually enter reality. So I would say what a lot of people don't talk about, and I don't talk about it as directly sometimes because I don't want people to misunderstand how I'm saying it and act like this life doesn't matter. It's very easy to take the wisdom and go, none of this matters. Because it actually, the more you wake up, the more it matters more. Mm. Like if I, this was a dream, I'd be living more on purpose because I knew I couldn't fail. And some people take that and go, screw it, who cares? Mm-hmm. But you have to get to through the parking lot to get to the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah.
You can't say, screw it, who cares about the parking
lot? You don't want to go back home.
you already drove here. We drove here in the van with the Cheerios on the ground. We got to get there. So the people who think they're in control, the celebrities who have done things to maintain their status, it is all a level of recognition in the practice lifetime. Mm. Then after this, when you cross over, you enter into reality. So this is like if you go to a college, this is the orientation. You have a lifetime that is an orientation for higher lifetimes. And the things we do on the planet will set up what we are ready and need to learn in future lifetimes. Mm-hmm. So the people that do all the things in this lifetime, everything is being set up perfectly so that every soul has their journey to see what they don't see, to realize what they don't realize, and to grow as they need to grow. Every soul will evolve to a place of being sovereign in a way that is responsible for their behavior and not irresponsible of other people's power and light. And what we are doing in this practice lifetime, in this hologram, is we are evolving the consciousness of the collective to such a vibration where people that incarnate into this world don't need to start in the darkness and then return to the light, but can start in the light and then just explore higher vibrations of light. So the importance of this lifetime is that we are ending so many patterns so that we don't have to start in survival and end up at the opposite scale, but that we can start in the light and just experience the infinite frequencies of light. So we're actually helping this planet wake up to such a degree that the planet doesn't have to play out polarity. It doesn't have to bring you darkness to awaken your light. More and more children are born more self-aware.
Yeah.
And it's that the world we live in isn't yet prepared to be an environment of self-awareness so that children don't have to shut down in order to wake back up, but can stay awake. So even though there are people that are thinking they're in control and don't understand that they are trying to control a dream occurring in the middle of space, and they're in a hologram, and they're only attached to the dream they're in, and that's going to take them on its own journey that is already, the trajectory is already there. But they themselves are playing the role of being dark characters that are awakening the light in so many people that as the light awakens in such a greater percentage, the fabric of time vibrationally can no longer create oxygen and space for their existence, for their patterns, for their agendas. So we're literally waking up the planet to where we're going through timelines where those characters and those patterns stop existing. They just don't exist anymore.
So do they come in with this like intention of like, I'm going to play the bad character to wake others up? Or are they just coming in as a bad character and they just happen to benefit those who are needing to be awake?
Yeah, because most people will oversimplify this and they'll say, oh, they chose, I'm going to go down there and be a bad character.
Yeah.
But that's because we as empaths are trying to tell the story from a place of self-awareness because we're self-aware. So another confusion people have in healing is they say, oh, this trauma happened to me. This person abused me. I must have chosen it because we're trying to tell the story from a place of self-awareness. Uh-huh. It's not how it works. Mm-hmm. No one chooses it like people say they chose it. It's just that people have this really interesting thing where if we can oversimplify things with a bigger fanciful answer, we feel like there's a purpose where there wasn't a purpose. And instead of spinning in chaos, we feel like we have some level of control, mm-hmm. a control called understanding. Mm. And it's the understanding that helps us have space from the trauma. And we think that that's actually a form of healing. It's actually a version of bypassing.
Yes. There are so many people, like whenever we first started doing law of attraction, all that kind of stuff, and we're like, you just need to think positive enough and then your life will be this. And I was like, well, you know, I'm a person of color and I grew up this way and this is what happened to me. I would not have chosen this. I would not have right. chosen these experiences. And when we look at our world where war and people are being wiped off the face of the planet at alarming numbers, like it's like, I don't think they would have chosen something like that. So how do we reconcile that awareness? Because if we are aware, so say you, like you said, we're in the parking lot. This is the parking lot. We're trying to get to the other place. I do some astral traveling. Like I know that like when I'm out of body and it's like, yo, this feels more real than my actual physical life does. But what is the point then? I get the point of the existence in the sense that we're training, we're learning to come to greater awarenesses. But is there any part, at least in your opinion, is there any part of this experiment that's gone horribly wrong where this stuff is extraordinary and extreme in ways that it may not be beneficial to us after we get out of here?
Well, I think no, because what happens is this training program is actually training future angels and spirit guides. So
for what?
For to accompany the next generation of souls through this program.
So what's the program for? This is the biggest question I have every single time I talk to anybody like you. I'm like, let's get to the meat. What is it for?
Because like a fifth grader goes from elementary school to middle school and middle school to high school and to university, a soul evolves through their lifetimes and is being trained to go from a soul who incarnates through the karmic cycle to being an angel or a spirit guide guiding other souls through their karmic cycle, because it's all about the soul growing from elementary school to middle school to high school, because as the souls in heaven through the incarnation cycle evolve in frequency, that is simultaneous to the universe always expanding.
Okay.
And always expanding. So because the universe exists as an energy of consciousness that can never stop expanding, souls cannot stop growing. And any program on this planet that's trying to stop evolution is only going to wake up more people out of denial, and it's only going to unravel its own existence because the universe can't stop growing and expanding.
So I feel like as a human, my mind can't conceive that amount of expansion. And that, if we keep coming back here to do this program, we turn into guides, we come back, we volunteer, we're recruited, you know, that kind of thing to get to what? Like, do I then get my own planet? Like, I'm always like stuck at this question.
Well, you go from being a guide to one soul to a guide to a group of souls. Mm-hmm. You go from being a guide to a group of souls to a guide of a culture or a country or a world, and then it's a universe, a solar system, and it's just the divine waking up into more and more of how it co-creates on the largest level. Now, you can't conceive it. So the interesting question is if we can't conceive it on the biggest level, is the ability to conceive the right tool for what we need? Because everyone's just, I'm trying to reconcile this.
Yeah.
But it's your acceptance that you cannot reconcile it that allows other skills to take the lead. Mm-hmm. So for example, we don't have to reconcile this, because to reconcile this is to reconcile it from a viewpoint of fairness. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that the universe is too perfect to be fair. Mm-hmm. And what most people do is they associate fairness with perfection.
Right.
The world can't be perfect until it's fair. I will say point blank, there is nothing in this program that has ever occurred out of sync with how it was designed. To think that it has gone astray means universal will didn't create existence. Means that this was not created by an intelligence, by a oneness of source. To think it's gone off the rails, the humbling reality is Is this all, is this what we needed to wake up the world? And if we look at the state of the world right now, as sloppy as things are, as overt as things are, as completely ridiculous as things are, there is still humbly a large percentage of people that do not see or question anything. So then the question is, what more do we need for the biggest percentage to wake up? And that's why light workers were here. That's why we were sent here as light workers, to learn and train to be spirit guides for the world that is coming into this mass awakening, this higher vibrational reality. And in order to hold space for what the world's waking up out of, we had to be trained as to, well, what are the patterns the world is reconciling? Well, you get a narcissist. You get a narcissist. You get a volatile family. You get an alcoholic father. And you get a, and all of these things set us up for the healing journey. And our healing is not only our expansion, our stepping into our initiatory roles as light workers, not only learning how to be the spirit guides that we're going to be in future lifetimes, but it's also holding space for the world to awaken. And in truth, as this timeline of the world evolves and reawakens, the earth will never be at this point ever again.
Yeah.
So we are, a lot of us are here because we're ending the timeline of earth having a polarity of light and dark. And this is the lifetime where earth becomes a sovereign light planet, where we are experiencing the extinguishing of darkness through the remembrance of light. So this lifetime is very important, because we are saying, the, in order for the universe to continually expand, the earth can't play out dualistic patterns.
It'll get left behind.
Yeah, third dimension.
Yeah.
And so that stuff dies off, and a new vibration of a world emerges, which we call the ascension, which some people call the rapture, however you want to word it. And we're literally experiencing the death of volatility. But in order to experience the death of volatility, we have to experience a ramping up of it, so that it captures the attention of the world and starts to play its role of awakening people back to their light over time.
That is a fantastic answer.
Just a feeble, okay.
Yeah. My audience loves this shit. Like, we love it here. So, because what I always get caught on is why. Like, I am a professional question asker. So right. I'm always like, but why? And I just keep going with that, right? I was the one in my Sunday school where that was like, what about the dinosaurs? Like, right. How did that work? Like, Adam and Eve, did they live together? You know, my mom was like, talk to your father. and I had a host of spiritual experiences that they were like, that's demonic, that's this, that's that. And I'm like, but why? Like, why would that be the case? They seem nice. Like, you know, so I always get caught on that question. Most likely, so I had this really incredible reading where this guy told me a lot of stuff that confirmed a lot of the channels and things that I had, but he said, you didn't volunteer to come here, you were recruited. And I was like, okay. Interesting. You have my ear, because that seems familiar somehow. And he was like, yeah, they pulled you from such and such. You were already busy doing whatever you were doing. Long story. And said that I came back here for this specific lifetime, that this specific lifetime was very important for exactly what you just said. This idea that we are shifting out of this duality. A lot of people talk about 5D and like translating into this light planet, whatever. But at some point in my own spiritual journey, I was like, yeah, but like, are we though? Because a lot of us, especially spiritually speaking, you've seen this in the rise of New Age and so on. There's a lot of like, I'm special. I'm a star seed from so-and-so. And it's like, you might be, but today you're a human. And because you're human, like, we need to like figure out a way to ground this information so other people can be brought along as well. And there is this information that seems like it says that this is such a special time. But how, at least for me in my brain, I know why, but I love to hear other people's answers. We see this cycle. Mm-hmm. Where we kind of come into this awakening and then we go back into the darkness. We have a Cold War and then we come back out and we're like, okay, and now we have this regression, massive regression with our politics, and we're going back into the space. I do see on a large scale loads of people being like, this is wrong. This is wrong. We didn't see it before. Now we see it. This is going to change. But in your opinion, how much longer are we looking at here? Because a lot of my listeners and stuff are like, yo, it's getting really like patchy. Like, maybe I'm going to get out of here early. Like, this is feeling like a little too much. We have too many narcissists running the planet, and it feels too difficult to embrace. It feels too difficult to manage and endure.
Well, you know, this is going to happen in stages.
Yeah.
And so that's like, I can only handle 2 more years. Well, you know, it's not going to be in 2 years, you're going to see heaven on earth.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at, you know, this is a long game. Life mm-hmm. is a long game. Think about the amount of time the ocean batters the side of a hill to carve a plateau or a cliff out.
Mm-hmm.
And the universe will spend thousands of years just to create the right fertile soil for a flower to blossom.
Mm-hmm.
So the universe doesn't work in time. We do.
Right.
And so I understand how people feel, and I do understand that. Just like I told the story of when I learned that my politeness gave me the feeling in my body that I couldn't wait for other people to give me. Our awakening consciousness gives us the experience of heaven without having to leave here first.
Mm.
So we're not waiting for the world to wake up, because the question is not how awake is the world. The question is, how awake am I? The reason I can live so heart-centered is because I've gone through a series of profound awakenings that have created a perpetual state of what's called samadhi consciousness, to where the awakening I go through is perpetual. It's ever expanding. It's an equal amount of ever being and ever becoming, and it happens every day, but there's no space between it. It's just this constant expansion beingness that is waking up with people at certain levels. But it's that we can't think of it. It's easy to think of it like, when are these people going to be taken out of power?
Mm-hmm.
The truth is, right now, everyone's becoming aware of what doesn't feel right, what's inconsistent, what doesn't resonate. The solutions of this planet are going to be based on a community level. It's going to be a grassroots movement. It's going to happen in communities. It's going to happen in neighborhoods. It's not going to happen on a political level. So yeah. I would say, there's still a level of spiritual infancy where people are looking at characters on a screen, and it's, why aren't you doing what you need to do to take care of me? And that's the collective wound of people still projecting their family trauma onto political figures.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't mom and dad, why aren't mom and dad taking care of us? We've told them what we need. Aren't they listening to us? So that, I would say, is that politics, and I'm not trying to take sides because I'm a philanthropist, I'm not a politician.
Yeah.
Politics is a theater. And I used to work in the professional wrestling industry when I was younger as a writer.
Oh, yeah?
That was my dream job. And that's when, and behind the scenes, it's like the good guys and bad guys are talking about what they're going to do.
Right.
It's not that different in politics. So really, the political theater is playing off of the unprocessed wounds that children have with their families. And it's actually very clear that you can see people sitting around disgruntled, wondering when mom and dad are going to get it together. But here's what's really interesting. If we're going to talk about the evolution of consciousness, in order for consciousness to become a global reality, a thing we talk about in everyday life with every walk of life. So there's this funny idea that spiritual people think that ascension is that we have evolved spiritually and we're going to sit around and wait for everyone to get their shit together. Mm-hmm. And if you idiots can just wake up and we'll just finally have some sage ready for you. Space is at the yoga class waiting for you. And we'll sit there and go, it took you long enough, love and light. But here's the horrifying and surprising realization, is in order for healing and awakening to go mainstream, it is actually right now we're experiencing everything that spirituality was rooted in, the truth of those teachings, the path, the awareness is actually waking up out of spirituality.
Right.
So you're going to have people that have healing experiences. You're going to have healers that work in medical offices interfacing with medical professionals, whether allopathic or naturopathic, which is already happening. Mm-hmm. You're going to have energy healers in surgeries. Mm-hmm. You're going to have medical intuitives. And we're going to have all of these things we think of in the future. But in order to have that, the spiritual counterculture has to be seen as a cocoon that's flaking away.
Yeah.
We can't keep it for our little special group.
Yeah.
And because if we're all going to be in our special high vibe group, and here's the thing I say to people all the time, if you want to just hang out with your high vibe people, and I totally understand talking to someone about your feelings, but that means the high vibe people are hoarding the light that needs to be spread to the other people. Mm-hmm. Everyone needs it. In the same way that I want to philanthropically make sure organic fruits and vegetables make it to the neighborhoods that don't have markets, that are called food deserts, where they only eat packaged food. Like, I want to distribute this. So as a spiritual teacher, I distribute the consciousness to all cultures, to all neighborhoods, to all walks of life. In the same way that we teach meditation in prisons, in the same way that we need to bring healing into shelters, we need, you know, and by the way, I'll tell you a very funny story. I talked to someone who, I remember I was talking to someone who was really big in teaching the law of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to them and they said, yeah, I just don't know what my next leading edge is. And I said, I know. And I said, what? I said, what if you went and taught the law of attraction in homeless shelters, in shelters where people are trying to recover from broken relationships? I said, if you can teach people how to manifest Ferraris, why don't you go teach the people that are in the worst positions how to do it? Why don't you bring it there if that's what works? Oh, I don't know about that. And I said, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you know about that? And they said, are you doing that? And I said, yes, I have. And I continue to. I've done sessions with people on the streets. Mm-hmm. I sat with them on the sidewalk and I actually counseled them because they asked me for help. And if I see someone in help, I offer the help. Absolutely. And so I think that as we see the world wake up to the things maybe a lot of us know, we have to also realize as spiritual people, we are also going through a massive awakening. And we're waking up out of the identity of a spiritual ego.
Right.
We're waking up out of the idea of special interest groups, because if we don't like their special interest group, guess what? We have our own passive aggressive special interest group that are just that maybe not as atrocious, but you know, go to a spiritual event and be no one someone recognizes. That's always
open. Oh yeah. Oh, I know.
So when I came in this industry and I was no one, that was one thing. Then all of a sudden, literally overnight, I became Matt Kahn, and I say thank you and I serve everyone with love. But I cannot tell you how uneventful that is for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are people who knew me from the beginning who always felt me. Then there are people that once that I walk into a store
mm-hmm.
and just some random dude, then they realize I'm Matt Kahn. Then I watch the shift.
Yeah.
And I have compassion for everyone. But really, in order for this to get to the world, spiritual people have to wake up out of their version of special interests. And we have to act, we have to realize that trying to have too much space from other vibrations is keeping the world where it's been. And we have to bring these things together. Of course, you make time for your alone time and your process, and you take care of yourself and you have boundaries.
Yeah.
But like, if you're a light worker, you're bringing the light where it works. You're bringing the light where it needs to go. And I think that, especially when you have outdated teachings like I only do what brings me bliss.
Mm-hmm.
And then I stop feeling bliss, I stop doing it. So we start things and don't finish it. So in this journey, you have people that have grown up that have not woken up. And you have people that have woken up that are still growing.
Grown up, yeah.
That's what a lot of spirituality will become, is awake people completing the parts of themselves that have not grown up, just as we hold space for grown-ups that have not woken up.
Ooh, preach. Okay. Cause there is something, yeah, there's something so grounded about that, that resonates with me so deeply, because like, even like my, the name of my show is Spiritual Shit. Yeah. And I heard the name when I was driving in the car one day, because I was like, I'll start. Someone said I should start a podcast. Yeah. I was like, about what? And they're like, well, yeah, you really like to talk about spiritual things, da, 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 da. And I was like, well, you know, maybe. But like, I thought, who's going to want to hear what I have to say? Apparently a lot of people. But I sat down and I heard the name and I thought, this is it. This is the name. It's going to be more relatable. It's going to be something that people who are not into this industry in Love and Light are going to maybe feel, it appeals to them. It's going to feel more grounded, whatever. I told a few people who were close to me and they were like, you really think you want to use that? That doesn't seem very spiritual. That is, you know, like, are you sure you want to be associated? It's profanity, you know, whatever. And I was like, I'm gonna do it anyway. Okay.
Yeah.
So that it pulled in a very different group of people. And yeah, kind of like, I was so used to going into the same thing. I go into places being the only person of color, the only practitioner there, like going around and people being like, what's she doing here? What is she doing? I did a fair. And I made this whole like to do about my tent. Like my tent was going to be like very special. It looked like retro circus. Loved it. Cool. It was very like vibrant, but it was so different. And it was kind of like, in my opinion, groundbreaking, but other people were going, this is not what we do, you know, or having some of that kind of affect. And I was like, I don't give a shit. I'm gonna be here, you know, like that. Kind of thing. But there's something so, what I love about what you said is so grounded, that yes, there, those of us who have grown up as empaths have a lot of some of that trauma, of the management of trying to like get our vibration under control, because we're so transient with our emotions and we're just sponges. We just absorb everybody else's shit. And when we get to a point where we say, okay, no more, that being an empath doesn't mean being a doormat, that I can put up boundaries, but that when I mature, when I grow up in that space and understand that being an empath is actually power, that I can do a lot with my ability to sense and feel and be compassionate to other people. Woo! There's a lot of work I could do if I allow myself to be in those spaces. And I think that's really important for my audience to hear, because sometimes it gets to be a little too much, you know, like I'm taking a break from Instagram right now, where I'm only using it to post for business. I'm not answering, looking at stories or reels or anything like that. And I thought, look how much capacity I have now to talk to people. Like, I'm an introvert. I was like, have interviews all day long. And yesterday I had 6. And I was like, I feel great. Like, I can go, like, we went out and talked to some neighbors and I was fine. When I don't have this thing delivering to me the worst fucking shit I've seen or heard 10 times over every 5 seconds of the day. So yeah, it was just like, I have more energy to do what I came here to do. So I really appreciate that perspective. You said something, I think in your book, compassion begins with perspective. And
it actually does.
Talk to me about that, because I think as a closing statement for everybody, this idea of compassion and how to love others is what we need more of in this world.
Well, and I agree with you and I love everything you just said. And I think that, again, spirituality becomes maturity, right? And then awakening will one day on the planet just be seen as the energetic form of puberty. I mean, it's
yeah,
it would be like if no one knew what puberty was at 12 and you went through this, and people gather around you, tell us what it's like, and you're like, I'm not, but it's like, we're all going through this, we just don't know it. So the passion begins with perspective, is that it's one thing to have compassion for your view of someone else's experience. It's another thing to say, like when you were talking about being the only person of color at an event, my compassion is not going to sit here and go, oh yeah, I know. I hear you. I know what that's like, because obviously I don't. Mm-hmm. So my compassion will say to you, hey, I've never had that experience, but I'd love to just step into your shoes for a moment. Tell me what that's like. Mm-hmm. And I think that the ability to hold space for people to share their story is how we process our pain. How we say, I'm interested in listening, because everyone that has harmed any human being has been the outside person, another. Yeah. So each of us represent a course corrective opportunity to say, I'm safe and I'm interested. And you may not share with me what I'm asking for, but I'm just here to help you make peace with your fear of outside reality or fear of other. And just to kind of, you know, bring this together from compassion, you know, and it's something I was invited to do a talk at the United Nations last year, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
And what was really interesting is I gave a talk that in my heart, just me personally, like I've been doing this for 18 years. I've done so many videos. Can't remember most of what I've written or done. And I gave a talk differently than I usually do. And I walked away so proud of myself. What was so funny is how unimpressive the reaction was to what I'm about to share with you. So I'm gonna share with you that I spoke at the United Nations and I felt like I was making proud one of my greatest heroes, who was Martin Luther King Jr. Was up there and I was saying something that I felt. And what I and the hilarious thing was the reaction was like, it was so funny.
The slow clap.
It was like barely anything. I'm like, see y'all later. I'm gonna go get some pizza. Okay. See you in the studio. Whatever, United Nations. But it was for a specific group of people. It was really interesting. But anyway, what I thought was, I said, life purpose can be as simple as looking in the mirror. And for me, when I look in the mirror, I'm in a body, right? I'm not a white male, but I'm in the body of a white male. So my ability to listen and give course corrective experiences to any person in this world who they themselves or anyone in their ancestry has been hurt or take advantage by a white person or a white male is my purpose. My purpose is to be the course corrective experience of anyone or any lineage that has been harmed by my skin color or gender. I said, beyond spiritual, I said, spirituality is just what makes that important for me to lead with, but that every day I think about treating women with respect as a way of healing the wounds that men before me have created. Think about when I'm talking to people of different cultures, how I genuinely love learning about culture, especially food, because I'm really into cooking. And I talk to people about cultures and food, and I can feel myself helping to heal lineages that have been oppressed by people of this skin color. I don't feel like I'm a white person, or I don't feel like I'm a man, but I
just
feel
a person like who happens to be white.
A soul that happens to be in the body of a male, because this is the work I came to help correct. And with that, when we think of compassion, I'm constantly aware of the fact, and I'm not blinded by my spiritual role or my recognition and all the things I do. I mean, I'm very blessed by it, but I'm blessed that it gives me the privilege to give other people opportunity to touch many lives. If I can help another healer lift them up the way I wasn't by anyone, you know, I'd love to be able to do that. But if there is any privilege given to me by my gender or my skin color, how can I use that to give course corrective experiences to anyone that comes my way? And I take that incredibly seriously. And that fills me with more pride every single day than thinking of myself as a spiritual teacher. And I think because of the importance of that I do in my life, and that literally without fear or intensity, my vibration or my awareness or my wisdom is demonstrated in every interaction I have. Even when I'm joking with my wife, when she and I are joking, we always joke in a certain context of respect. There's nothing to me, and I like a lot of humor, but for me personally, nothing that ever marginalizes people. And so for me, I love that I'm a spiritual teacher. I love that I play the role of a healer. But what helps me feel really good about that is not because of my recognition and fame. It's because every day I am aware of the fact that I have the power to give course corrective experiences to people that have been hurt by either a white person or a man. And that's a purpose I'm fulfilling every day.
Well, you're going to get your clap today. I appreciate that. I think that's really beautiful because that compassion comes out of your perspective. And a lot of times people are not considering that aspect. They're not considering the empathy that can come from their privilege, that can come from the positions that they hold. Instead, they look at it as an opportunity to just keep it right. And not think about the rest of the world. And that's where, at least in my opinion, where most of the awakening needs to happen. It's not for people right. to be meditating on a bump on a log. It's not for them to know their sage or whatever. It's for them to acknowledge humans mm-hmm. that are unlike them in different experiences that will mm-hmm. help us foster and grow our capacity to love each other, to unify with each other, to have more empathy for experiences that are different than our own.
Well, and you know what I think is interesting, a couple of things I'll say is that, you know, spiritual people can come to spiritual events and they can gaze each other's eyes and be in love. But I often see from the stage, people that are gazing into each other, but are both avoiding the ability to know each other. So I think that loving each other begins with knowing each other.
Yeah.
And each other means I'm ready to ask questions and listen instead of just waiting for someone who wants me to share the spiritual things I want to say.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's time for us to connect with one another. And I think that we don't have to agree on political policy, if that's what your bend is. But I think that really what spirituality is meant to become is a humanitarian effort yes. where, and I described this before, is that peace, most people think peace is a ceasefire between countries. Mm-hmm. But true peace is when two countries at war says, I will agree to take my resources to help people in your country and lift them up.
Yeah.
And the other country says, I'm going to use my resources and lift up people in your country. And if we're using our resources to lift up people in the opposite country, and we both agree to that, instead of putting money into weapons, mm-hmm. then ceasefire becomes what's called peace. Mm-hmm. But peace, when we agree to not have military, peace is when even peace between human beings. So hypothetically, if we were in a conflict,
right.
I would say, I hear that here is where the disadvantage is in your life, and I have something that could help lift that up. And you might say, and I hear that this is something you need and I can lift this up. If we both are using our resources to lift each other up, that's when we find peace. Yeah. So I think the passion begins with connecting, knowing each other, a willingness to listen. And when we're going to really spread peace in the planet, it's how can we all take a little bit of our lives and help spread it around for the benefit of others? Like if you have a spiritual person, and I'm just using spiritual person,
yeah.
soup kitchen, and they're about to scoop food on someone's plate. And they say, before I do this, I just want to share with you what this is bringing up for me. And the person is just, put the food in the plate. I'm hungry. Right? Or like, I had someone come to me and they said, what should I think about when I'm serving the food? Just serve
the food.
People think of nothing because you're thinking of yourself. Think about them. So yeah. I think we really wake up out of the spiritual facade. It's about abundance is having enough to share. None of us are going to have enough for everyone. But right. every person you come into contact with is someone to know, if you so choose to, and someone whose life you can contribute to, and you'll contribute to theirs. And so if we just have this awareness, we start to build communities everywhere we go. And it's mm-hmm. on a communal level that all of this starts to really wake up, and we start to see a lot of the nonsense disappear.
Yeah. You know, that word community just keeps coming up.
Yeah.
Every single time I have an interview, somebody talks about community. And I'm like, this is so great because we weren't hearing this like a year ago. We weren't hearing a lot of talks about community. It was all about our own spiritual journey. And it was very individualistic. And we're seeing that shift down to the point of like, okay, the house that I live in, the neighborhood that I'm in, it's transitory. So there's some gunshots once a month. There's something, you know, like we're all working together to try to heal our neighborhood. But you wouldn't have seen that like a few years back. Like we got some friends who we're like, let's, you know, we're not moving, you know, like let's all be right. together to really like protect each other. And so what was really beautiful about that is we all started talking about building a community garden. We started talking to our local police. We started saying like, hey, like we want to make friends with the people who live in these houses who are rentals. So they respect the neighborhood, you know, like there's just a lot of initiative for that. And like my heart is like so geared towards my daughter. I'm like, I just want her to be safe. So like, I could get out of here if I need to. We can't leave right now. But then there was this other half of me being like, no, like I'm right in the space where community is possible. It's budding. Right. And when shit really goes down, I don't want to be in some acreage all by myself in some rural city. Like that's probably more scary than if I like, I know my neighbors, I know who to talk to. We're looking out for each other. And I just like, I just keep seeing that as a theme. So I really appreciate you bringing it up because in even in that we've took a break on this podcast, like I essentially ended it last February and then decided to bring it back because everything that was happening in the world, my guide and spirit guide and guide of guide was like, hey, you got to come back and do this. You're not done here. So just the theme of that community aspect, I hope that really hits hard with our listeners because we do need more compassion. It has been, especially those of us as empaths, we've started to see our sensitivity as a burden and that we need to shut ourselves off and boundary ourselves and protect ourselves. And yes, that's true. But and, yes, and we can, where we can have compassion and perspective and openness in order to unify us again. So thank you so much for the work that you do. We're so appreciative of it. Y'all make sure to look out for his book, All for Love, The Transformation Power of Holding Space. Matt Cotton, you're a rock star. Can you please tell everyone where to find you?
Sure. Well, and again, this has been such a lovely conversation. I really appreciate it. And thank you for bringing your podcast back because
thank you.
It's a tremendous value to the world. For those of you who are interested in my work, you can sign up for my free Sunday newsletter by going to mattkahn.org. That's mattkahn.org. And we send you a link to our free documentary that we made that was, can't say enough good things about it. And it just, again, for anyone who we have touched in this conversation, I just want to say thank you for your time. And it's always an honor to serve you.
Thank you so much, Matt. Those of you who listen to this podcast, send us to someone you love, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to connect with me more, head over to patreon.com/thelovelyalia so we can discuss your views about spirituality in our monthly meetings. If this episode spoke to you, please share it and make sure you tag me. And always, if you're looking for some spiritual guidance, you can always find me at thelovelyalia.com for spiritual advising. Thanks again for listening. I hope you have a beautiful week, and we'll see you next week.